Autobots, transform!
Well, hey, welcome back to the Transformers Nitpickers podcast show. I'm Paul.
I'm John.
And today it is episode 52 of Transformers Cybertron. It is Inferno.
This episode was written by Hiro Misaki, and the last time on Transformers Cybertron, we watched Bud's documentary of the Autobots building a space bridge. And in this episode, I don't know, man. Look, okay, dear listener, this is, you know, the episode that never was. My understanding is that it was episode two, and they kind of, in for North American audiences, cut this one up and edited it into episode one, which is what we got with, what was it, Fallen, I think?
Fallen, yeah.
Yeah. So there's a lot of stuff in this episode, Paul, we've already seen.
Well, yeah, and immediately we see the Autobots arrive at Earth, which we've already seen, and they just stand there in space looking at it, and Vector Prime says the black hole will eventually destroy Earth too, and he needs to get the planet key back, or the planet map from Megatron, so I guess he's off to do that.
Yeah, and that seems to surprise Optimus, that the whole, you know, the black hole is going to destroy everything, even though I'm pretty sure he said that on Cybertron, but that was 50 episodes ago, and I'm not going back to watch it. So Optimus sends, before Vector Prime can leave, he gets Jetfire, Hotshot, and overall to...
Hey there, fellas. Just wants to let yous know that I lost them three screws what I was using to straighten the shelf, so as I took three additional screws out of the awning, and now said shelf is level, but you should be careful around that there awning.
What awning? I don't see an awning.
I painted it with that invisible paint. Ain't used to been following this podcast?
No.
I try to forget about this show as soon as we're done recording.
Whatevers, just get back to work. We're rolling tape.
So yeah, a bunch of the Autobots go off with Vector Prime to recover the planet map, and then Optimus and Scattershot head to Earth to find Landmine.
Yep, and immediately with the kid who already found Landmine, Kobe's running to Mr. Stanton's place to get the tools, and he tells Mr. Stanton he needs this spare tire jack that he's holding to mine for gold in them thar hills. Yeah, that's it. So Mr. Stanton has no more questions. He's like, yeah, here's the key to my ATV, too. You're going to need that to lug all the gold home.
I couldn't tell if Mr. Stanton, like, believed him or just thought, oh, you kids, I won't ask questions. But yeah, kid gets the ATV, and then we cut to Kobe using the ATV to pull Landmine out of the crater he caused. And this is like, these are the scenes where we saw this stuff already.
Well, yeah, Landmine asks if this is Dirt Planet, and they say, no, this is Earth. And I think you said before, well, it means the same thing. And he introduces himself. He's not from space. He's from Cybertron, and he walks after them. And it really emphasizes that he's leaving giant footprints in the road.
Yeah, that's like a plot point in this episode that might have been the only thing, one of the two things I liked. So then we, as they're introducing themselves, they meet up with Lori, who has switched into the shorts and t-shirt that are the impetus of this entire series, we now know.
That she only ever wears once. But yeah, she tells them again, or maybe this is the first time, because I mean, yeah, they kind of edit them all together, that she's wearing her brother's t-shirt. It's a... Also, not her usual voice. It's the other actor that does her voice sometimes. But yeah, Kobe tells Landmine have a seat and starts digging through the toolbox. And Lori tells Landmine, don't worry, Kobe's kind of stupid, but, you know, he can fix things. Except, isn't this where they first met? Like, how would she know that about Kobe?
No, remember they in the what we saw originally, they met when he was dirt biking.
Oh, yes.
Because yeah, she was like really pissed that her family moved here and then she didn't like the way he was living.
Yes.
But one thing I caught was that Kobe asks Landmine if he's standard or metric. And right there, I'm like, American writers have to be. Or like early Gen X Canadian writers, because anybody else would say imperial or metric.
Oh, yeah. I never thought of that. Yeah, I never even looked at it that way. But Landmine's like, oh, gee, I'm not sure. I'm like, why would you be either? You're from another planet. You just said
yeah,
that.
I'm Quasiclocketon. What?
And we go to Optimus, who's already scanned a fire truck to use as his alternate mode, but I thought they already did that too. But either way.
On Cybertron, yeah.
Yeah, but Scattershot, he can't decide. He's just watching all these cars go by on the highway. And then he looks at a picture of a tank on a billboard for a movie or something and scans that to transform. And I thought, wouldn't it be funny if he went to transform and he turned into a billboard?
Or he was just like a two-dimensional tank. Like, how do you know what the back end of this thing looks like, Scattershot?
Yeah.
But that doesn't stop him. He transforms it or scans one. And then he and, like, Optimus is like, a tank? Really?
Yes. And well, then Scattershot points out, like, you're this huge, ridiculously too big fire engine with giant cannons on it. Like,
it doesn't
you're
exist
not exactly
anywhere on
inconspicuous
Earth
yourself. Yeah.
So then we go to Megatron. Oh, yeah, they drive drive off and they're talking shit to each other. But we go to space where Megatron and Starscream arrive on, like in an asteroid field, but they land on an asteroid. And there is a great shot here where the camera like rotates around them and they're on a 3D asteroid. It's just, it's a really great epic shot.
Megatron says, this is where the first key is. And Starscream's like, I don't see anything. He's like, Megatron's like, no, no, it's inside the thing. And he just smashes this asteroid apart by punching it underneath his feet, but there's no key here, and Megatron thinks the map's a fake, and he starts to squish it in his fist.
And then Starscream has to point out, no, 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 the map is really old, and the universe is constantly moving, which effectively makes the map useless, but this show's going to ignore all of that. So Megatron...
save it anyway, right? Yeah.
Yeah, Megatron figures, oh, we'll make some adjustments, don't know how, just when Vector Prime and his team show up.
Yeah, they attack, and Jetfire just rams Starscream, and Overhaul tackles Megatron, who just two-fist Star Trek bashes him off kind of thing, and Vector Prime takes a few swings at Starscream, and now Hotshots is buzzing around Megatron like a fly, but they're no match for him, and Starscream and Megatron just basically beat the shit out of them and fly off.
Oh, yeah. Like, it's very one-sided, but we go back to Earth, and Kobe's working on landmines some more, who he's, and again, these are scenes we've seen, like, there's, I'm gonna say we've seen about...
Yeah, it's exactly the same one.
Yeah, we've probably seen about 30% of this episode already, but he's asking why the kids aren't afraid of him, and Lori's got a line where she's like, oh, we always knew aliens were real, unlike the adults who insist that you guys are just rumors, because you know how there's so many adults... Like, there's plenty of adults that think aliens are real, Lori, you dolt.
But yeah, Landmine even asks, well, is everybody on Earth as kind as you are? And yeah, she says, well, some of us, but not everybody. And here we go. The locals have found Landmine's footprints, and they think it's Bigfoot. And they mention UFOs and crop circles. And then there's one guy that's like, them's are squares. Like, not circles.
Yes, why does the sheriff and his posse in Colorado have, like, deep South accents?
Yes, that's right,
I know we've talked about how all these voice actors are Canadian, so I'm guessing it's a couple guys from Toronto and Montreal who have, like, never really been to Colorado or the deep South, and they're just like, do the American accent. But these bunch of yokels go off searching in the woods. Commercial break.
Yeah, well, we come back, we get the posse out looking for Bigfoot, I guess, and back with the kids, Kobe has landmines hand all fixed up, but there's still the problem of getting him back into space, and he says, I'm not from space, I'm from Cybertron, get it right, kid, but no. Landmine tells them that the Autobots will be looking for him, so yeah, don't worry about it, we just have to lay low till they show up, and then they see the people that are looking for Bigfoot, which explains perfectly why these people can't see Landmine at the end of the tracks they're following. Like, if they could see that, it doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter. Because we cut to Optimus, who's at a gas station. These two yokels are talking about how the search party's out looking for Bigfoot, and one of them's going to go check it right away, and they figure it's a giant monster. And Optimus goes, oh, thank you very much, gentlemen. That's the information I need. Good day to you, and drives off.
Yeah, so, I mean, these guys were just sitting there talking while there was somebody sitting at the gas pump. Like
a fire truck at the gas pump,
but yeah, he drives off, and now we're redoing Thundercracker getting his Earth form. He scans a fighter plane and sees Landmine, just like he did before, and the kids run from the others who can see them. Like, they're like, they went that away. Well, you can see Landmine at this point, but yeah, they're telling each other, don't let them get away. But Lori sees Thundercracker approaching and says, hey, is that, you know, the guys you mentioned coming to look for you? He's like, no, that's a Decepticon, and then just shields them from Thundercracker's missiles again. And again, it's that scene of like the missiles hitting the side of the mountain with this huge explosion.
And that explosion starts a huge fire, which the sheriff sees, and he's like, oh, no, I don't think he saw the missiles, but they all start to run away, like the sheriff's posse. And then Optimus arrives and realizes that he has to, A, get rid of Thundercracker, and B, remain hidden, so he immediately, C, transforms.
Yes. Duh. And he asks if the humans capture, or he asks Landmine, did these humans capture you? But yeah, he tries to get Thundercracker away, and transforms, flies off, and they do that thing where their shots collide, and then, oh, sorry, Thundercracker transforms, flies off, Optimus transforms and flies after him, and Bud's like, oh, look, a flying fire engine, and the police, who, in this posse, who couldn't care less about the children they were following that are now trapped inside this fire that they are running from, don't see this flying fire truck?
No, they don't see any of it. They're like trapped in this fire and I guess aren't looking up because what happens is Optimus flies overhead and then zooms over the lake and picks up a bunch of water. And then he does this whole exposition about how he's like phase inducer thingy mib jigger whatever's are going to help put out the fire. And it's like, dude, you're spraying water. Calm down.
It's basically lawn sprinkler mode is what I call it, because he just kind of hovers and just rotates kind of on the y-axis. And but yeah, still these idiots can't see the giant robot in the sky putting out the fire. They're just like, ooh, it's rain, like out of a bright blue sky. Like they have no more questions about that. But yeah, the fire's out.
Yeah, I think one of them even says like, oh, it's such a coincidence. So they're gone and they're, you know, not a problem anymore. I like that, you know, the Autobot saves humans without being noticed. I always like when that happens. But the kids then have a moment to thank Optimus just as the other Autobots show up in the scene. Like, they're all here now.
And they're all flying in robot mode. So I think we even mentioned that in episode one. Okay, we did. They can all fly, except they very clearly do not all fly for most of the show. But they all introduce themselves to the kids, and seeing Overhaul again is on his face. It's so obvious. He is intended to be Leo Breaker, where he has those fangs.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It is what it is. There was a neat bit here where the Autobots start talking to the kids, and Lori insists to the other two, like to Kobe and Bud, that the Autobots are, Jetfire says he doesn't want them involved. So she's like, look, these Autobots are either trying to protect us or they don't trust us.
Yeah. And Jetfire says they can't get the Earthlings involved, and Scattershot's like, it's too late, man. They're involved. Their planet is going to be affected by the black hole too, but yeah, they want to try and keep the kids safe. So I guess Jetfire relents that it's too dangerous for them to help.
Sure. None of this matters because we've already watched the whole series and we know what's going to happen. But Optimus, then he goes through his leader stuff where he's like, all right, we're going to need a home base and we're going to need to find the keys and we're going to need to protect the Cybertronians and Earth. And
get some invisible paint.
Get some invisible paint. Jesus. And then everybody notices Lori's shirt, which is as stupid a plot device now as it was at the beginning of the series.
They finished the story two episodes ago, and it was becoming clear they were padding the show for time long before that, but they needed more episodes, so last time they gave us an epilogue, but they still came up an episode short, so they used an episode they cut from the beginning of the show in North America to make it longer. Why did they start trimming for time so early? Did they expect it to run long? By the time the show was finished and into reruns in Japan, it was in the middle of a four-month break between seasons one and two in North America. Well, by that point, they should have known damn well that cutting the second episode of the show was a stupid idea, that they wouldn't have enough content left for 26 episodes, but TV shows don't always have to be 26 episodes a season, and the world isn't going to end if it's only 24. Either way, they put it back in, but why at the end of season 2? It's not even introduced as a bonus episode or lost footage or anything like that, and far be it from me to defend a clip show or a flashback episode, but they could have made it into one of those and slipped it right back in at the start of season 2 and nobody would have even questioned it. I might not have liked it, but it wouldn't have stood out nearly as bad. It's been since before Christmas that the kids have seen the show, probably got into other things. We'll take an episode to remind them who's who, and then start the thing right back up with Critical. Hey, take it as one last chance to sell Overhaul before he turns...
Here we are at the end of another episode of the Transformers Nitpickers podcast show. A short episode because there wasn't a lot to talk about, but the episode was Inferno. Paul, what was fire about this episode?
Having now finished the 2005 series of Transformers Cybertron, as well as the entirety of the Unicron trilogy, I find myself a changed man.
I'm going home!
Not in a spiritual sense, as one may conclude from having gone through the journey with us. More so, I have grown a patience for the things I cannot change, no matter how dearly I wish I could. For if a man can suffer through such atrocities as the ones forced upon us by Hiro Masaki and his team of confuddled blocks of wood, that man has gained the fortitude required to waste a listener's precious time with a meandering monologue at the end of a meandering television series. As for Lou, his shelf stood strong and sturdy for many, many hours. And as for the awning, it remained steadfast throughout the...
Ah! Oh!
Damn awning fell on me!